some ice cream, or read a book, or sharpen all the knives, but stop. You're not leaving. Fern would have my hide if I let you leave. Fern takes team spirit a little far sometimes. Megan smiled wryly, says the former cheerleader who got her job through nepotism. We do what we have to do. I glanced at the door. She should be back by now. She wasn't... Megan paused before continuing, sounding suddenly nervous. She wasn't arrested for doing it, was she? What? No. Lowry security wouldn't let that happen, even if they had a way to pin things on her. It doesn't work that way in the real world. Television procedurals have a lot to answer for. They make it look like being within 15 feet of a dead body gets people arrested for murder. Which, to be fair, it can, but there are hundreds of other factors to be considered. Fern was a Lowry employee, carrying no weapons or obvious means of harming a person, and when she wasn't tinkering with her own density, weighed 95 pounds soaking wet. She might be suspected if the man had been shot and there was gunpowder on her hands, but since he'd looked stabbed and her hands were clean, she was going to be fine. She was going to be fine. She had to be fine. So what's going on? I don't know. I gave the door another look, willing it to open, willing Fern to appear. Neither thing happened. Instead, my phone rang. I lunged for it with barely a glance at the clock. 3 a.m., swell, and swiped my finger across the screen to answer. Hello? Hi? It's Fern. Her voice was shaking, and she sounded like she was on the verge of tears. That didn't necessarily mean anything beyond had a long day and landed on a corpse. I hoped it didn't. Hi, Fern, I said, glancing at Megan. She sat up straighter, snakes once again hissing wildly. Where are you?
I'm at security, the main office. They, already called my shift supervisor to say I was going to be off work tomorrow. I have to go over everything with them, and then I have to talk to some people who are in charge of public relations. They don't get here until 8, so I'll be home sometime after that.
Her voice quavered even harder on that last word. I closed my eyes. You probably can't answer this with anything but a yes or a no, but have they let you change your clothes?
No.
Meaning she was still covered in a stranger's blood. That was dandy. Find someone in charge. Someone who looks like they pay a lot of attention to their clothes. Someone like my mother, who would have clucked her tongue and given Fern a new shirt hours ago, recognizing that no one really enjoys the feeling of blood drying on their skin. Not even Grandma Alice is that far gone. Ask them if they have something else you can wear. They should get you a new shirt at the absolute least.
Oh, said Fern, voice going small. Can you ask Megan if she works tomorrow?
Fern knew my work schedule and knew I had to be on shift. Megan's was less predictable, thanks to the hours the hospital kept. One of us will call in sick.
Not you, said Fern.
The steel in the words was enough to take me aback. She continued,
You have too many absences this quarter. I don't want to see you getting docked a vacation day for absenteeism. How can we go to Key West this year if you don't have the vacation days?
I had no hobbies. I had no local family. Apart from Megan and Fern, and Mary when she popped in, I had no friends. Put all this together, and I was possibly the most reliable employee Lowry had. Been late for work several times, but never late enough to get written up for it. Most of the time, my managers didn't even notice, since years of cheerleading and roller derby and carnival work have left me incredibly efficient when it comes to getting ready. As long as I was standing where the guests could see me when I was supposed to, they didn't care. Fern didn't want me there for another reason. Fern, I said carefully, are the police still with you?
Yeah, she said. I'll see you in the morning, okay? Tell Megan I'm fine.
And she hung up, leaving me with only the sound of empty air. I lowered the phone and turned to the agitated Gorgon. She says she's fine, I said. I think she's lying, but not too much. She's freaked out, not panicking, and not under arrest. She wanted to know if you were working tomorrow.
I seem to have come down with a cold, said Megan, and coughed weakly into her hand. Ugh, oh no, that sounds serious. Better stay in bed. Uh-huh. I gave her a dubious look. Can Gorgons get human colds? Nope, which is why I'm one of the only residents not to have had at least one sick day this quarter. My supervisors will be annoyed but understanding. Maybe even relieved. Despite her weariness and worry, Megan managed to twinkle. They were starting to suspect I wasn't human. Somehow, I found it in me to laugh. Megan's smile faded. Now you, on the other hand, are human, and you have to work tomorrow. Go to bed, Antimony. I'll make sure our girl is okay when she gets home, and you'll go to work like nothing happened. Because nothing happened, because I wasn't there, I said with a quick nod. Megan tapped her nose. Bingo. Now sleep. I flashed her a relieved smile and walked back to my room, where I stripped, checked that the knives beneath my pillow were where I needed them to be, and sank onto the mattress. I'm not ashamed to say that I was asleep almost instantly. When your entire childhood is spent training for a war that may never come, losing sleep over a little blood is not in the cards. I dreamed of the carnival, walking down the midway to the distant sound of calliope music, and I knew that everyone I loved was somewhere nearby, trapped in the hall of mirrors, or drowning in the tunnel of love. And I knew I could never save them, and I knew it would kill me to try. I tried anyway. When my alarm shouted me back into the waking world, there were char marks on my sheets and tears on my pillow, and somehow, that was exactly what I'd been expecting. With Megan staying home and Fern still waiting to talk to public relations, I had to take the train by myself. I compacted my body into the confines of one seat, trying to look like I was half asleep as I hugged my bag. Feigning unconsciousness wasn't a difficult trick. Between our after-hours roller skating and the time I'd spent pacing and worrying about Fern, I'd managed to get slightly less than 5 hours of sleep. Not enough sleep deprivation to kill me, but my breaks today were going to be spent sucking down coffee and praying I could avoid a fatal caffeine overdose. My apparent doze meant the people around me didn't feel any need to keep quiet in my presence. If anything, I was encouraging the conversation, since I was Fern's roommate, and hence a constant reminder of her absence. By keeping my eyes cracked just a hair, I could see how many of them were glancing in my direction before they continued gossiping. So, I heard from Eddie and security that the little blonde one got arrested last night. A gasp. What did she do? Murdered a man. A guest. It was difficult to understand why murdering a guest would be worse than killing a cast member, but it was written plainly in the speaker's tone. By supposedly killing a guest, Fern had committed a mortal sin in the eyes of not just the law, but the entire Lowry Entertainment Complex. I swallowed the urge to snort derisively. Right now, it was too important that I listen. Gossip is toxic, especially because it's often so much more interesting than the truth. The truth is provable and dull and difficult to change. Gossip, though, by the time there was a statement about the body that cleared Fern of all wrongdoing, she would already have been convicted 100 times over. The man would be her lover, her brother, her blackmailer, her illicit son. Speaking up would only make things worse. The slightest attempt to defend her would be read as proof of her guilt, since innocent people don't need to be defended. Again, sometimes I want to take a walk through the writers' rooms of all those police procedurals and see how well bullshit television tropes can burn. There were 3 good things about the situation, if I could call them good. First, Fern was genuinely innocent. Being convicted in the court of public opinion might annoy her, but it wouldn't impact her life in any meaningful way. None of these people were her friends. She had me, she had Megan, and she had her bowling league every other Wednesday night. That seemed to be enough. Humans are among the most social of the world's various intelligent species. What would have been unbearable for me, what was unbearable for me, was just fine for Fern. Humans aren't the most social. I'm not sure who gets that label, but I'm betting on the dragons. They live in nests that contain hundreds of individuals, all piled on top of each other like a garter snake mating ball, and they seem perfectly happy that way. Which is good for them, given the cost of real estate in some areas. Second, and most importantly where Fern's job prospects were concerned, cast members don't gossip with guests, no matter how hard some guests may try to make us. It's not snobbery, although it can seem that way. It's a matter of drawing a hard, firm line between work and play. The fact that Lowry sometimes sends secret shopper guests into the park to see whether we'll rise to the bait and start talking trash doesn't help. Even if the rest of the cast thought Fern was a murderer, she'd never be outed to the guests, and her job wouldn't be in danger. Princess Aspen would continue untainted, as she always had. Thirdly, and most importantly, at least for me, none of the people on the train were saying my name. Fern's instinct to shoo me away had been exactly right, and I'd managed to get out of there fast enough that no one was connecting me to the scene of the crime. I'd be able to keep my head down and stay out of the spotlight, and honestly, that was exactly what I needed. The train pulled into the stop for the employee parking lot. I woke up and followed the others onto the platform, not bothering to conceal my yawn. When playing a role, it's best to fully commit. The platform fed into two stairways and one escalator, with an elevator at the far end. I yawned again and joined the crowd thronging at the escalator entrance. I always tried to leave the elevator for people who needed it. Hard to fit a wheelchair on the escalator. But I didn't feel up to the stairs, not with the night I'd had, and my balance as shot as it was. I'd try to descend normally, trip, fall, and spend the day trying to come up with an explanation for my stitches that didn't make me sound like a total klutz. Someone grasped my elbow as I stepped off the escalator. My hands balled into automatic fists, fingers instantly red hot. I clenched them and forced a smile as I turned to see who was touching me. Punching is frowned upon at Lowry Land, and we had technically been on company property since stepping onto the train. Setting people on fire is also frowned upon at Lowry Land, which was a problem, since my hands were only getting hotter. I was going to start leaving blisters on my own skin soon, and that was never easy to explain. Sophie smiled at me, the expression not reaching her eyes, and let go. "Melody, so glad I ran into you," she said, in the exact tone she had once used to call freshman girls to task when they showed signs of buying into the bitchy cheerleader stereotype. It wasn't a tone I'd heard directed at me in years, and it still made my skin crawl and my clothes suddenly feel three sizes too tight. "Can I give you a ride the rest of the way to work?" Translation, she needed to talk to me, preferably in private, and her offer was really a command veiled in a thin veneer of free choice. Oh, sure, I could refuse. Then she'd have to press the issue. And we both knew who was going to win that one. As always, Sophie made me feel like an absolute mess just by existing. Her hair was perfectly groomed, and today's pantsuit was a shade of burgundy that made her skin seem to glow from within, tan and healthy and filled with wholesome goodness. The contrast of it against her cream silk shell top was almost criminal. I, on the other hand, was wearing Lowry Land sweatpants and a black tank top and hadn't bothered brushing my hair before leaving the apartment, since I'd need to style it in the locker room anyway. Goblin Market meant sausage curls for the long-haired girls, hairsprayed to within an inch of their lives to make sure they would never be knocked out of place. "Sure," I said, unclenching my hands and trying to flex away the heat in my fingers, letting it disperse into the morning air. At least we were in Florida. Even the mornings were so warm here that the increase in the ambient heat around me was unlikely to be noticed. It's too bad I didn't get a tendency to freeze things instead of burning them. I could have gone to work for Disney instead of Lowry, made the big bucks as the most accurate Elsa they would ever have. Except I couldn't have. The consistency is the key word across face characters at all the parks that use them, regardless of the parent company. What one Princess Laura does or says or knows must be echoed across all the other Princess Lauras, lest they damage the illusion that they've casually wandered out of a cartoon. Sadly, this is why Princess Thistle and her husband dashing Prince Corwin are the only face characters who speak American Sign Language. Sophie nodded, clearly having anticipated this outcome when she made her request, and turned to stroll out of the station, trusting me to follow. My coworker stared as I left in the company of a hiring manager, and the first mutter started before I was out of earshot. Swell! I'd managed to keep myself out of the rumor mill where Fern's corpse was concerned, but now I was going to get my turn for a completely different reason. Three spaces outside every Lowryland employee train station and bus stop were reserved for managerial use. This was the first time I'd seen one of them filled. Sophie strolled toward her silver Lexus, pausing at the last moment to beep the doors open, and slid inside. The interior of the car smelled like leather and cleaning fluid and money. It was like inhaling the inside of every expensive wallet, and I couldn't shake the feeling that I was going to be charged for it. Sophie didn't say anything, just slid her key into the ignition and started the engine. Eyes watched from all across the station entrance as we pulled away, some jealous that I was getting a ride, others taking in every detail of what they saw so they could repeat it later to anyone who would listen. "So," I said finally, desperate to break the silence, "how are you?" "They make these cars so you don't even need a key anymore," she said. "You use your thumbprint to unlock it?" "Guess I shouldn't be surprised. We started using guest thumbprints to key their tickets 3 years ago. Did you know we've been sued for our guest information by the federal government 6 times? They say we have the largest private fingerprint database in the country, and even wanted felons of children who want to ride a roller coaster. We could help them solve a bunch of unsolved crimes. But we haven't," I guessed. "Oh, hell no. Imagine the headlines. Lowryland destroys family vacation by summoning the FBI? Disney would make hay while the sun shone on that one." "No, we'll keep fighting their requests, we'll keep shoveling money toward the lawyers, and we'll keep banking on Disney being a bigger, sweeter target. If they're the ones who allow the government to start arresting guests, our stock will go through the roof overnight. Always stick with the people who seem to care about your privacy." I snorted. I couldn't help myself. Lowryland only cares about the privacy of their guests as long as it impacts the bottom line. There are cameras in all the rides and public areas of the park. There are even more cameras in the company resort hotels. Nothing happens on Lowry property that Lowry doesn't know about 30 seconds later. Realization hit me hard on the heels of that thought. My eyes went wide and my spine went stiff, my fingers not even heating up in the face of my shock. Sophie glanced at me and nodded, looking satisfied. "Good," she said. "We're on the same page now. And in case you were worried, there aren't any microphones in my car. The corporate overlords, long may they reign, will probably be bugging the rank and file long before they get around to bugging management." As a member of the rank and file, that probably shouldn't have been reassuring. Somehow, it was, if only because her need to explain meant that they weren't doing it yet. "How much did you see?" "Not nearly as much as I wish we had." Sophie pulled a sour face. "The cameras in front of the Midsummer Night screen have been down since yesterday morning. A damn squirrel chewed through a wire. One of the electricians found the little bastard hanging off the transformer box, stiff as a board. They were supposed to get the cameras back on last night. And obviously that didn't happen." "Then how, ice cream?" Sophie shrugged, turning onto the freeway. "There's nothing wrong with the cameras there. We have footage of you skating after Miss Conway, and then skating back alone, grabbing Miss Rodriguez, and exiting the park. So my question for you is this. Were you with Miss Conway when she found the body?" I liked that wording. Sophie wasn't accusing Fern of murder, just of covering up my part in the victim's discovery. "What happens if I say yes?" "I ask how confident you are that Miss Conway is going to stick to her current story, which is that she was by herself when she tripped and fell into the flower bed, having already told her roommates to return to the apartment. Under normal circumstances, she would have been liable for any damage to the landscaping. Given she found a body that security somehow missed on their initial sweep, we're willing to let this one go." "Yeah." In that part of Fairyland? In that sort of flower bed, surrounded by a low hedge which was often full of birds in the hands of curious children. The odds that our victim would have been discovered by someone under the age of 12 were extremely high. Talk about bad press. So, if I had been there, and if Fern were lying about that part, I would be very confident in her ability to stick to her story. I knew her before we came here. She and I were sort of in the same situation. Sophie nodded thoughtfully. I understand why you ran. You do? Of course I do. I wasn't born yesterday, Mel. Sophie sighed, shaking her head like this was the sort of burden she would rather push onto someone else's shoulders, but was nonetheless compelled to carry on her own. You still won't tell me what that bastard finally did to make you leave, and that's fine. I'm not going to push. You have a right to your privacy. That's something I would never try to take away from you, especially not after what you've already been through. If you'd been with Miss Conway when she found that unfortunate soul, the police would have questioned you. They might have taken your picture. I suppose the other thing I have to ask is whether there's anything out there for them to find that might embarrass the company. Because you're my friend, we did a shortcut on certain aspects of the hiring process and background check. Was that a mistake? No, ma'am. If Sophie had set Lowry's lawyers to digging, the worst thing she could have discovered was that Melody West didn't technically exist. Since we'd gone to high school together, shared locker rooms and buses and late-night pizza parties, she knew Melody existed. She would have written all that off as nonsense, an artifact of my dropping off the grid for so long. My fingerprints weren't in any systems, except for Lowry's. And the Covenants. That was what I needed to be worrying about. That, and Fern, and my job. I caught a glimpse of the dashboard clock and yelped. Sophie, I'm going to be late! Don't worry, your manager has been informed that you're needed in public relations, and your shift is being covered, with no black marks on your record. The inside of the car suddenly felt very cold. I told you I wasn't there. I know you did. We're calling in everyone who closed in Fairyland last night to make an announcement about what happened and hopefully squash wild speculation. Sophie's frown was fleeting. Gossip is poison. No argument there. Sophie sighed. Do you ever miss high school? The squad? I cheered in college, but it wasn't the same, was it? You're doing it again, I said. Doing what? Fishing. You want me to say no, it wasn't. And then you'll know that not only did I go to college, but I was on a cheer squad while I was there, or I wouldn't know. And then you know at least one of those things isn't true. Told you, I can't talk about the past. Yes, yes, I know, but you'll forgive me for being concerned? Sophie frowned again, harder this time. If that bastard shows up here, I want to know how hard I need to kick his ass. The thought of Sophie kicking Artie's ass under the assumption that he'd kept me locked in a closet since college would have been funny. I hadn't been so sure she'd do it, and equally sure that the stress would make him lose control of both his empathy and his weird incubus mojo. Being whammied into falling hopelessly in love with my cousin probably wouldn't do anything good for her as a person. Artie's father, my Uncle Ted, is an incubus, which makes Artie a half-incubus, which means he's been taking longer than normal to get the walking porn soundtrack that is his body chemistry under control. Since incubi are, by and large, very focused on consent and making sure no one is doing anything they don't want to do, Artie spends a lot of time locked in his basement, avoiding the sort of girls who might accidentally decide they want to marry him and have his quarter incubus geek babies. Which is all of them, barring close relatives and people like our cousin Sarah, whose body chemistry is too far from the mammalian norm for pheromones to work on her. She's in love with him because she loves him. Weirdo. He's not going to show up here, I said. But if he does, I will call you so you can come and help kick his ass. I took a deep breath. So, if I had been there last night and I had seen the body, I guess I'd want to know what happened. Are you asking me to gossip? No. I'm asking you to help me sleep better at night, and to equip me to help my roommate, who is, If you remember, an avatar of fairy tale goodness and purity for children the world over looking for a little magic in their lives. Unless you want Princess Aspen to start telling kids how to get blood out of velvet. Fern probably didn't know how to get blood out of velvet. I did. I could lead a goddamn master course in getting blood out of any kind of fabric, with a bonus session on getting blood out of hair without washing away all the hairspray. Alas, there isn't much call for that sort of thing in my current occupation. Sophie was quiet for a minute or so, thinking it over. Finally, she said, "It looks like there was some sort of altercation, probably toward the end of the evening, fortunately out of sight of any of our younger guests. The victim was a local man named David Wilson. It doesn't seem to have been an intentional murder. The officer I spoke to said it looked more like an accident that he had been hurt badly enough to bleed out. Just sheer dumb luck. Sheer dumb luck doesn't usually go around stabbing people. No, but angry kids sometimes do. And all the metal detectors and casual security in the world won't stop people from smuggling knives into the park. We can't get too intrusive or we'll lose business. We couldn't even justify metal detectors to our shareholders until Disney did it without collapsing under the weight of the resulting outrage. Pat-downs and full body screening are never going to happen. And if you ever tried to quote me on this, I would call you a liar and have you fired on the spot. But I'm glad that they won't. I blinked. Even with the folks in PR spinning full-time to keep us out of the papers? Even with 10 bodies, I'd be saying this, said Sophie firmly. I don't know if you've looked at me recently, but you may have noticed that I am not, in fact, a white person. I am, rather, quite brown.
I did notice that, I said carefully.
One of my great joys here at Lowryland is walking through the park and knowing that people from all over the world, from all walks of life, are able to come and enjoy what we've created without fear of racial profiling from the cast. We can't control what the other guests do, and yes, we've had a few incidents over the years. But every cast member treats every guest with equal courtesy, at least to their faces. Sophie's expression turned hard. Bring in guards and thorough searches, and that changes. Suddenly, it's the guest with the unfamiliar accent who gets randomly selected for further screening. Suddenly, it's the man with the faded gang tattoos who has to walk through the metal detector 3 times. David Wilson died because someone snuck a knife into the park. That's tragic. All my sympathy goes to his family. I will lose 100 Davids before I let children who look like me, children who look like anyone, start feeling like their skin color means they aren't allowed to have access to the magic we give to children who look like you. I didn't say anything. Sophie glanced at me and grimaced apologetically. Sorry, she said. I guess that was sort of heavy. No, I'm glad you said something, I said. I hadn't really thought about it. You never had to. We had reached the gates to the back lot. Sophie pulled up to the guard booth and smiled, flashing her ID badge. The man on the other side of the barricade nodded, giving me only a cursory glance before he raised the barricade. We drove down the winding driveway that connected the gate to the parking lot in silence. Lowryland was designed to look like an entirely different world once guests were inside its borders. What most of them never realized was how much work went into creating and maintaining that all-important illusion. The walls surrounding the park were higher than anyone realized at casual glance, built into the environment around rides, concealed behind shop facades, and cunningly designed greenery. All told, the lowest point in the Lowryland wall was 12 feet high, and the park designers were hard at work coming up with ways to bring it up to the otherwise standard 15 feet. Only the wrought iron front gates were lower than that, affording a tantalizing view of the entry plaza to the people standing in line every morning or looking over their shoulders every night. Once inside the park, the rest of the world might as well have been a story told to frighten children. That included the administrative offices, the management parking, the back lots where the parade floats were stored and maintained, and so very much more. Lowryland had its own suite of generators, much like the carnivals where I'd whiled away my childhood summers,
but built on a substantially grander scale. Lowry Land had freezers packed with enough food to wait out a zombie apocalypse.
People looking for survivalists always focused on the preppers.
They should have been looking at the big theme parks, where the roller coasters would keep on rolling long after the lights of Miami had gone dark. Sophie drove past the first three parking lots, all of which were distant enough from even the employee gates to have their own shuttle system, and around a large building blazoned with the smiling face of Monty Mule and Hillary Hinney, the lovable cartoon scamps upon whose backs Michael Lowry I had constructed an empire. Her car slid into her reserved slot with what sounded like a satisfied purr, obscuring her name, which had been spray-painted onto the concrete when she became important enough to warrant such prime parking. She looked at me again, expression grim. "Stick to your story, Mel," she advised. "Once we're inside, I'm not your friend. I'm the person who has to make sure every employee represents the best face of the company. If you say or do anything that makes my superiors think you might have been there, I won't let you down," I said. Sophie nodded. "Good," she said, and got out of the car, leaving me to trail along behind her like a lost duckling, looking for a way back to the safety of the pond. The air conditioning inside the public relations building was like a punch to the face after the growing heat outdoors. It didn't help that PR, out of every department associated with Lowryland, had to live the Lowry life, decorating everything in corporate iconography. Gone were the tasteful photographs and colors of the hiring office, replaced by aggressively bright primary shades and even brighter posters blazing out advertisements for the company's most iconic properties. It could have been interesting, under the right circumstances, to wander through the halls and see the evolution of Lowry's style across the decades, from the white and gold minimalism of Gold Tree and Silver Tree to the lush pre-Raphaelite jewel tones of Goblin Market, all the way up to the stark green and silver of Thistle and the gilded pastels of Mooncake. The three people waiting for us in the lobby sort of killed that idea. They were dressed like PR wonks the world over, in suit jackets, pressed slacks, and pencil skirts, all following strict gender lines, sadly. At least mixing it up a little would have made things interesting. Their accessories were in gaudier colors than the norm, allowing them to blend better with their surroundings. But a bright red pocket square or a chunky green necklace couldn't change the fact that they were the hard hand of strict formality, trying to enforce itself on a fairy tale wonderland. There was no sign of Fern. I looked anxiously around. She might be crammed into a corner somewhere, and clutched my duffel bag against my chest. It was part true concern, part distraction. I couldn't disguise myself, not with Sophie right there, knowing what I really looked like. But these people didn't know me. If I wanted to act like I was easily confused and frightened of losing my job, they couldn't call my bluff. "Mr. Knighton," said Sophie, stepping toward the central of the three PR reps, hand already outstretched. He looked at her coolly before reaching out and slipping his hand into hers. He looked more like a funeral director than someone who had any business working in Lowryland. When he switched his attention from Sophie to me, it was all I could do not to recoil. Megan was an actual reptile, and her gaze wasn't that reptilian. It was a crude, mammal-centric way of looking at things, and yet I couldn't help myself, because it was also true. He looked at me like he was trying to figure out the best way to take me apart. "You must be Melody West," he said. I'd never been so grateful to be at Lowryland under an assumed name. If he'd said my real name in that voice, that hollowed-out sepulcher tone, I would have been compelled to stab him. There are bogeymen who never manage to sound that much like they belong under a rock. "Yes, sir," I said.
"Your friend assures me she was alone during last night's unfortunate incident," he said. "We have some security footage that would seem to contradict that. Can you tell me what happened?"
Why PR was asking this and not park security was sadly easy to understand. Park security didn't care. Unless they had reason to suspect me of being the person who did the stabbing, their attention was needed elsewhere. But PR...
PR made sure people kept repeating that old canard about how no one had ever died on either Disney or Lowry property. Because they spun and kept on spinning, turning straw into gold, turning rumors into reality. PR swept in when one of the studio's teeny bopper TV stars got wasted in Goblin Market's supposedly adults-only wine bar, turning it into stomach flu and teenage hijinks, and concealing the public drunkenness faster than a six-year-old can cover themselves in glitter. PR did the heavy lifting, keeping the Lowry brand bright and shiny and buffing out all the dings. They were the true predators of the park ecosystem, the lords of this particular veld, and I had good reason to be afraid of them. They'd tear me limb from limb if that was what they thought Lowry required. They were loyal. Lowry kept them well-fed. They still scared the crap out of me, and I'd fought actual monsters that were trying to kill me with teeth and claws and other nice normal things. Fern and I were roller skating after closing, I said, careful to keep my voice meek and my tone from wavering. If I oversold this, I'd end up setting off their bullshit detection systems, and then things would get ugly. She knew I was supposed to open this morning while she had the afternoon shift, so when I said I was getting tired, she told me to go ahead and go home. We do that sometimes. That seems like a great deal of trouble to go to for less than 5 minutes of enjoyment, said one of the two women. They were flanking Mr. Knighton like lionesses, and seemed just as friendly when it came to outsiders. I decided not to like them. Not that there had been much chance of that. It's part of how we stay close as roommates and prevent fights in the apartment, I said. Megan doesn't skate with us, but she always comes to watch, and she thinks it's funny. That would be Miss Rodriguez, would it not? Asked the other woman. I concealed my wince at having been the first one to bring my second roommate into the conversation, and nodded. Yes, it would, I said. She's a resident at the hospital. She was at the ice cream shop while we were skating.
Lowryland frowns on activities such as skating in the park, said Mr. Knighton.
We've spoken to security, and they say as long as we wear protective gear and don't try to sue the park if we bang our elbows, they have better things to worry about, I said. That wasn't exactly what they'd said, but it was the gist of it. We did a lot of things by the gist of it at Lowryland. Disney was probably more formal. Disney also had a lot more rules, a lot more moving parts, and a lot more overhead. Honestly, if this was the life I had to lead, I was glad I'd landed where I had. Disney would probably have ended with me stabbing some asshole in a Mickey Mouse costume in the throat for implying that I wasn't showing the proper attitude.
Miss West is correct, said Sophie, smoothly interjecting herself back into the conversation. While we don't encourage after-hours activities on park property, we've shown time and time again that part of what gives the Lowry family our ability to stand together against adversity is the off-hours bonding we do of our own free will and without coercion. As Miss West and Miss Conway were not damaging park property and were wearing safety equipment, their activities are not under review at this time. Her eyes said drop it loudly enough that it might as well have been verbal. To my surprise, the PR team frowned but didn't object. Sophie looked at me.
How long do your skating sessions usually last?
Can be 5 minutes, can be 3 hours, depending on when we're scheduled to work the next day and how we're feeling, I shrugged.
I'll be honest.
Please,
said Mr. Knighton. I did my best to ignore him.
Sometimes, knowing I'll get to have some fun in the park before I go home is what makes it possible for me to keep smiling for our guests. I know work is work and play is play, but they have fun all day long, and I just want my turn. Is that weird?
Mr. Knighton looked like he was grinding his teeth as he said,
It's perfectly normal.
Score 1 for the little liar.
I gave him my best wavering smile, the one I used to use on teachers who wanted explanations for my bruises, and asked, "Is Fern okay? Can I see her?"
"Emily will take you to your friend," said Mr. Knighton.
One of the two PR women, the one in the chunky green necklace and the impeccable eyeliner, winged back like she was about to go to war, took a half step forward, identifying herself. He turned to Sophie.
"Miss Vargas, if you would."
Sophie walked over to join him, and they strolled away down the hall, the second PR woman following them. And just like that, I was dismissed. I turned to Emily, strengthening my smile against whatever obstacle I was going to slam it up against next. "Hi," I began. "I'm..."
"You stink like ghost, little girl," she said, an open sneer in her cultured tones. "Something's been haunting you. What have you been doing that you shouldn't have been?"
Chapter 6. Being right is never as important as staying alive. Evelyn Baker. Inside the Lowry Land Public Relations Building, trying not to panic. I froze. My fingers heated instantly, so fast that I didn't have time to ball them into my palms before they brushed against the nylon strap of my duffel bag. The smell of singed plastic filled the air. Prayed Emily wouldn't notice. Emily noticed. Her lips curved into a knowing smile. "Oh," she said. "So that's the way it is, hm?" I should have guessed. "So what are you? Ambulomancer? Train spotter? We've had a few of them infiltrate the park. They say the monorail and the roller coasters do enough to keep them going. Or are you an umbramancer? We haven't had one of those in ages." "I don't even know what that last one is," I said, my voice barely reaching the status of a squeak. "I mean..."
"You've got some balls on you, kid," said Emily. "Big brass balls. Or should that be big crystal ones?"
She barked brief laughter at her own joke. The sound was utterly humorless. "I have no idea what's happening right now, and I would like to leave," I said, in the prim, tight voice of an unhappy child. I heard that voice 100 times a day from children who wanted to sit down or go to the bathroom or do anything that would allow them to feel like they had some influence over their own lives while in a place that was supposedly designed to cater to their every whim. Sometimes I thought their shrill demands for the latest Princess Thistle Loom or Princess Laura storybook were born less out of greed and more out of the need to assert that they were still people who walked in the world. They were something other than the projection of their parents' desires for a perfect vacation scrapbook and making memories.
"Then maybe you shouldn't have wandered into a crime scene," said Emily, making the suggestion sound almost amiable.
"Look, I get it. You're stressed out, you're afraid I'm getting ready to blow the whistle on you, and you're apparently setting things on fire, which is a nice trick. Let me set your mind at ease." Her hand dipped into the pocket of her blazer. When she pulled it out again, she was holding a deck of cards. She held them out to me, fingers easing them into a fan. Emily smiled. It didn't reach her eyes, barely reached her lips. "Pick a card," she said. Something in her tone told me this wasn't a request. Hesitantly, I reached out and pulled a card from the middle of the fan.
"Show it to me," she said. "I thought you were supposed to guess," I replied.
I was stalling for time, hoping Sophie would come back or Fern would wander out of whatever room they were holding her in. Anything that could get me away from this cold statue of a woman with her card tricks and her freezing eyes. She would have been lovely if it hadn't been for the chill coming off her in waves. She had the sculpted bone structure and porcelain coloring of an original edition Emma Frost, and all the good humor and friendliness that went with that particular comparison, which was to say, none at all. Her blazer and skirt fit so well that they had to be bespoke, and her shoes were black leather kitten heels, elegant and subtle, and not so high as to leave her unable to keep up with someone moving at a brisk pace. Whether she'd shaped herself to the environment, or whether the environment had shaped itself to her didn't matter. She was here. She was flawless. And she was poised to kill. Meekly, I showed her my card. This time, her smile was more obvious and far easier to read. "The Three of Hearts," she said. "You're a sorcerer. Not a sorceress, there's no need to gender power. Power simply is, and it does what it will. But you haven't been trained, have you?" "No, barely at all." "Wait." She plucked the card from my hand, making it disappear. "That's why you reek of ghost. It's all about the bloodline." My own blood felt like it was burning and freezing at the same time. My fingertips were as hot as they had ever been. If I'd touched the duffel bag now, it wouldn't have been scorched. It would have been engulfed in flame. "I don't know what you're talking about." "Sorcerers and rout witches have one thing in common," she said. The rest of the cards followed the Three of Hearts, slipped back into her pocket and out of sight. "They run in families. Where you find one, you're likely to find a line of them, stretching all the way back to caveman days. Something in the genes. You're being haunted by someone who's trying to make you understand what you can do before you burn down the world. Aren't you?" Slowly, I forced myself to straighten, forced the tension out of my shoulders and the terror out of my eyes. I couldn't force the fire from my fingers. Like she said, it was in the blood, and right now, my blood was singing, stinging, demanding that I let it defend me and, by extension, itself. So I stopped trying. I let the heat rise until she could feel it from where she stood, keeping my fingers well away from anything I might accidentally ignite. "She's my grandmother," I said coolly. Making Mary a blood relative was the best way to deflect suspicion, and my actual grandmother wouldn't mind. Better to make it seem like I was the last of my line. She knew the last person in our family who had my little problem, and she's been trying to help. She can't help. Not really. "Now it's your turn. Who the hell are you, and how did you know about her?" "Rout witches always know," she said, and smirked like this was some sort of amazing revelation. Which I guess it would have been if she hadn't decided to treat me like a cat toy first. My head throbbed. Fern was still somewhere in this building, possibly without a clean shirt, definitely without a clean pair of undies. Every minute that passed was another minute where I wasn't working, and even if there wasn't going to be a black mark on my record that anyone could see, everything has consequences in a place like Lowryland. It didn't matter how many times management said my absence had been forgiven. Management wasn't a jury of my peers. The people I was supposed to have been sharing my shift with wouldn't necessarily remember all the times I'd covered their butts, but they'd sure remember the day I didn't bother to show up. I'd be paying for this for months. The fire in my fingers wasn't backing down. And maybe, for the first time since I'd retreated into the comfortable identity of Melody West, former high school cheerleader and woman in hiding, neither was I. "That's swell," I snarled, and was rewarded by her smirk fading, just a little, as she remembered that in the hierarchy of humans who can bend the forces of nature to their will, she was well below me, or would have been if I'd had any actual training. Still, I could burn this building down around our ears if I felt threatened enough. That was something. Rout witches are the most common kind of human magic user. And they're tricky. Most of their powers have to do with distance and the road. Somehow, don't ask me why, this also translates into a certain amount of access to the afterlife, which they call the twilight. They can talk to ghosts. Some of them can bend ghosts to their will or ban them from areas. They do what they do, and they do it well. It's just that what they do is limited to parlor tricks compared to what a true magic user can accomplish. Taking Emily's fear as a sign to continue, I asked, "Why are you telling me this? I thought protocol was we nod to each other and continue on without making a fuss. Sorcerers and rout witches don't fight over territory."
"No, they don't. That's true," she said.
"Will you please come with me so I can show you I mean you no harm? That I only want to help you?" I eyed her warily. "I'm going to need a second.
Of course. I took a step back, putting some distance between me and Emily, before I closed my eyes and tried to focus on happy, soothing thoughts. Thoughts that didn't make me want to burn down the building and fry myself along with it. Me, and Sam, and the flying trapeze. He was relaxed, in his furry, fury form, and he was holding onto the bar with his feet, reaching for me with his hands, primed to snatch me out of the air. My own bar was swinging high, and when I let go, I wasn't falling. I was flying, soaring across the tent toward him. Fire in my fingers guttered and died, extinguished by the memory of better times. I opened my eyes. All right, I said. Show me. Emily smiled. There was no sign of Sophie or the rest of the PR team as we moved deeper into the building, past posters, playbills, and framed cells that were worth more money than I'd ever seen in my life. Emily saw me looking and raised an eyebrow. I wouldn't have taken you for a true believer, with the way you were carrying on back there, she said. This building is a priceless trove of Lowry artifacts. That you were threatening to burn down, came the silent accusation. Then you shouldn't have been threatening me in it, I said coolly. It was getting easier to maintain my reserve now that I was past the initial shock of confrontation. All I had to do was pretend Emily was my older sister, and I could match every scrap of her smugness with a sneer. Better yet, my fingers were staying cool. Today's bout of wild magic was apparently finished, and not a second too soon. I suppose that's fair, conceded Emily. She kept walking, leading me through candy-colored halls toward what might well be my doom. All the bright paint and childish posters aside, the building where Lowry housed their PR team could have belonged to any corporation in the world. We walked past offices, kitchenettes, and open floor plan work areas where clerical staffers typed, answered calls, and illicitly checked their email on company time. The air conditioning and dehumidifiers were working overtime, so that even though it was a hot Florida morning outside, some of the people in here were wearing sweaters, living the American dream of heavy-duty climate control that someone else has to pay for. And I'd come within a panic attack of killing them all. My fingers stayed cool, but my cheeks grew hot as blood rushed to my face. I ducked my head, turning slightly away. If I hadn't been able to get my fire under control, this had to stop eventually. It had to. Grandpa Thomas didn't leave a trail of char and embers behind him during his journey from England to Michigan, and according to his diaries, at least the ones I had access to, he'd never had a dependable instructor. He'd put most of the rules of what he was and what he was capable of together on his own. And if he could do it, so could I. I refused to consider any other option. Emily stopped in front of an unmarked white door, pulling a key from her pocket. Really, the existence of pockets in such an artfully tailored skirt was more impressive than her card trick. I'll make sure your management knows you were with me. That will carry more weight than any excuses Miss Vargas Jackson may have offered, she said, sliding the key into the slot and turning it hard to the left. The air crackled with the sudden taste of ozone, like I was biting down on tinfoil. Emily turned the key back to its original position. I'll also send you with a book of free time slips for your shiftmates. It wouldn't do to damage your social standing simply because you had the bad luck to find a corpse. I wasn't there when Fern found it, I said automatically. Emily shot me an amused smile. Please, she said. Lies between us would be pointless and petty. She pushed the door open, gesturing for me to walk through. There was a choice here. I could do what she wanted. I'd already come this far. Or I could do the smart thing for once and not allow the creepy, overly secretive route witch to get me into a room I didn't know the dimensions of. But she knew what I was. She knew I wasn't trained. She wasn't family. If she said she could help me, the Covenant couldn't use her to track me down. If I didn't get myself under control soon, I was going to do some serious damage, the sort of thing that couldn't be covered up by lighting a candle or spraying some Febreze. I stepped through the door. The room on the other side was a small, featureless white square,
Emily stepped through after me, pulling the door gently closed. Five, she said. Four, three, two, one.
Because that's not the sort of thing that freaks people out,
I said flatly. She gave me a small cat that ate the canary smile and turned back to the door, producing another key. When she opened the door this time, it revealed not the colorful hallway of the PR building, but a set of industrial chrome stairs descending into the dark of a basement that Florida's high water table should have rendered functionally impossible. Dig a hole in a place with a high water table, the water comes in to say howdy. All of Lowryland's underground ride structures are equipped with an incredible assortment of pumps, barricades, and dehumidifiers. That's part of why the park has such a robust generator system. If the power ever went completely out for a substantial period of time, the flooding damage would be measured in the millions. I must have made a sound to register my disbelief. Emily's canary-eating smile widened. It's safe, she said. You have my word. I swear by the Ocean Lady that no harm will come to you while you are in my company. I didn't know what that meant, but it sounded pretentious. And when dealing with rat witches, that's usually enough for me. They tend to be the hot topic sort, fond of catchphrases and ritual weirdness. I can't really blame them. When magic introduces itself into the world in the form of a highway deciding to strike up a conversation, it's probably natural to go full-on Molgoth as a response. Emily would have made an excellent Molgoth in her teen years. She had the bone structure for red eyeliner and glitter lipstick. Picturing her that way made her less terrifying, and I held tight to the image as I stepped through the door, down onto the impossible steps. They held. They might be impossible, but that was no excuse for them to be structurally unsound. The walls were concrete, and the handrails had been bolted solidly into place, preventing accidents. The stairs themselves were gridded metal, the kind I'd encountered in 100 gyms and auditoriums, and walking down them was dismayingly like walking back into my own past, descending the risers at some unfamiliar school's athletic field, ready to throw myself back into the fray. Emily's steps echoed behind me, delicate tap, tap, taps as her heels impacted with the metal. I'd seen dozens of teen queens and derby spectators get their heels caught in stairs like these, sending them sprawling and suddenly shoeless, like Cinderella fleeing from the ball. Thinking of Emily eating stair was even better than the Molgoth thing, at least where it came to keeping me from freaking out. And keeping me from freaking out was essential. I wasn't sure how real this basement was, but I was damn sure I didn't want to be in it if it suddenly decided that being on fire was more fun than the alternative. The stairs went on for a hell of a lot longer than was safe or possible in Florida, until they ended at a door. I looked over my shoulder to Emily. She nodded, smiling encouragingly, which was terrifying. Once again, it occurred to me that maybe going into a strange, potentially non-existent room with a route which I didn't know was a terrible idea. That didn't matter. It was go with Emily or run from Lowryland, and I was so tired of running. Sitting still was killing me. A little bit at a time. My family didn't raise me to run. I was a price. I needed ground. I needed some place to stand. I opened the door. There was a shock when my fingers closed around the doorknob, like static arcing through the metal. It wasn't enough to hurt, barely enough to sting. And when it passed, I was looking at a conference room. Not just any conference room. Judging by the view out the wide picture window, a conference room on one of the top floors of a building. Maybe the one I'd started out in. Maybe not. A large oak table dominated the room, and a buffet was set up along one wall. Smell of food earning a growl from my underserved stomach. I ignored it. I had bigger things to worry about. Like, oh, say, the people. Four of them were sitting around the conference table, and one was standing at the end, next to the sort of bar graph that absolutely meant we were interrupting something. All of them had turned to look at the door when it opened, which meant all five were now looking directly at me. I had never felt so small or so grubby in my life. Emily planted her hands between my shoulders and pushed